Hey there, folks. Rob Hessler here with this week's Do Savannah special episode of Art on the Air. Very excited to share this interview with you today. I spoke with Alan Kindler, a surrealistic artist whose work is shown over at Cedar House Gallery, where he has a studio, and he will be having an upcoming exhibition in the first weekend of November. I got turned on to Alan's work from another recent guest from Art on the Air, Tatiana von Tauber, and he had some connection with her through her studio school, which of course recently closed down due to the pandemic. And she sent me a few samples of Alan's work, and I was absolutely blown away. Alan's work is so good craft-wise, but it has even more going for it when you add in the deep concepts that he has behind his work. He is very much interested in the dream world, and it's just really incredible. And even more incredible is that Alan is a self-taught painter. He's only been painting for about 5 years. And these oil paintings that we spent most of the interview talking about are just amazing. And I can't wait to share this interview with you. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from him, talking all about his work. And he's just absolutely so humble. One of the things I love about he and his work is that he doesn't impose meaning on the viewer who is seeing his paintings. He really wants people to come to their own conclusions when they look at the work, and he will tell you why that is during our interview. So listen up for that. Wanted to mention, of course, that you can catch past episodes of Art on the Air and my corresponding Art Off the Air column right here at Do Savannah, and all of my writings really that I do for Do Savannah here. Last week, I spoke with Jenny Eitel all about her philosophy, her work, and especially her pop art series, which I am absolutely in love with. It is all about popcorn. They're these beautiful popcorn portraits. It was really nice to talk with her and have sort of this alternative perspective about art making during this really difficult time that we've got going on in our society, and I think you'll enjoy listening to that too. Again, you can catch that right here at dosavannah.com. But let's get into this week's interview. Again, Alan Kindler, surrealistic painter. I think you're really going to enjoy listening in. Here we go. Rob Hessler here with Art on the Air Field Notes. I'm speaking by telephone with Alan Kindler, and we're going to be talking about his artwork today, as well as his upcoming exhibition at Cedar House Gallery, where he is an artist who has a studio in the space. Alan, let's dive right in here, because one of the things I found fascinating in researching you and your artwork is that you really came to painting later in life. You were interested in painting early on, but you kind of had a life full of many different jobs and businesses and all of that before you finally came to painting. What was your creative life when you were very young?
Well, you know, I grew up in suburban Pittsburgh. I was an only child of my mother was a nurse, my dad was an engineer. Just regular public school stuff. I remember getting really interested in painting in particular when I was in a high school art class. And I wanted to go to art school, but my parents said, no, you have to do something, you know, where you can earn some money. So I ended up going to architecture school. And after 2 years of that, I dropped out and ended up getting into construction and raising a family and, as you say, having a number of different kinds of jobs. So I had this long gestating desire to learn how to paint. And while I had some, you know, I did some drawing now and then and make cartoons for my kids, and I had a chance at some point to sort of start messing around with pastel. Didn't really get to begin oil painting until I came here to Savannah, which was in 2015. I have to say, one of the things that attracted us to Savannah was that there's a youthful, dynamic art community here. Mm. And I knew it would provide a little bit more support and impetus to keep trying.
Well, I have to tell you, and I want my listeners here to head on over to Alan's website, alankindler.com. You can also go to kindlerstudio.com, where you can see prints for sale. And I challenge anybody to believe you when you say that you've only been oil painting for 5 years, because these are, quote, very good. They're surrealistic portraits and paintings and these really pretty elaborate scenes.
obviously you had some interest in surrealism when you got started here, because, I mean, you can see this is going on. But how did you start getting back into oil painting? Like, where did you sort of train as far as being able to learn how to oil paint?
Well, you know, it's sort of an interesting collection of sources, I guess. You know, there's lots of stuff on YouTube, and there are lots of good books out there. But I knew that it's just like you can't play tennis from reading a book. You can't paint after just from reading a book or watching somebody do it on YouTube. So I needed some structure and some discipline. And so I happened to be down at the gypsum and noticed that there was a painting group that met at the gypsum once a week. And I got connected with them, and they had a space. And so I guess it was very shortly after we moved here, I started painting with that group. We were painting from the live model. And it was just a very nurturing, supportive place to be committed to doing something. And the surrealist part came out of having a model in the studio, but not having any environment in which the model was existing. And it just seemed like, after a while, there needed to be some world for the model to be in. Now, the surrealist part has always, I mean, that kind of sideways thinking has always been interesting to me, but my wife and I have been involved in a number of dream groups over the years, and this is a practice of gathering with other people and reporting on your dreams and talking about symbolism and what the meanings are, and, you know, learning your own encyclopedia of symbolism and also the archetypes that are common to other people, and just to become very familiar with the idea of associative thinking and the fact that everything's a metaphor for everything else.
Yeah, so let's delve into that, since you brought it up, because this is one of the things that I find really, really interesting about your work and sort of the background behind your work, because you mentioned your wife, Reverend Susan Carlson, and the work that you've done doing projective dream work. So explain to our listening audience what that means.
Well, the projective part of that is about meeting in a group. So because each of us shares our dream, what we do is we project our stuff onto other people's dreams. And so we say, well, if that was my dream, it would, you know, that brown Volkswagen that rolled over the hill would mean X. And the idea there is that as we share insights about each other's dream life, we have an aha moment where the dreamer suddenly says, oh, that's what, okay, now it makes sense. Now I understand.
I love
really,
that.
I kind of have to be there.
Yeah, I know, but I love that idea. I mean, I love that it's that, you know, that there is sort of a shared creative experience almost that's happening before the painting. So I wonder, like, how does that exactly relate to the, I mean, have you gone into these sessions before with these, you know, sort of collective groups of people talking about dreams and come out of it with ideas for your paintings? I'm just really curious about that.
Well, it's not so much a direct one-to-one thing like that. You know, we write our dreams down, and I have some years of history of dream imagery, but they don't. Here's the way it works for me. The process of making the painting is like dreaming while awake. And so these paintings take a while because, let's say, there's a figure, and I can talk about one in particular. There's one on the site called Mother is the Invention of Necessity. And that one actually started out as me cleaning off my palette and just putting it on a canvas because I didn't want to waste paint. And then it sort of evolved into an exercise in creating a three-dimensional space beyond the surface of the canvas. And I took the bust of a model that we'd been working with, and just the notion, the way she held her mouth invited a hummingbird. And so there's a cloud of hummingbirds around her. And then there are fish, and there's an octopus. And then her body is actually a honeycomb, and it's covered with bees. And those ideas just seemed like the right thing as I was staring at the painting and deciding what to put on the canvas. And then, like it happens in dream work, I remembered that I knew a poem And I wasn't thinking of this consciously when I made it, but this is a little snippet of a poem called Last Night as I Was Sleeping by Antonio Machado. It goes, last night as I was sleeping, I dreamt, marvelous error, that I had a beehive here inside my heart. And the golden bees were making white combs and sweet honey from my old failures.
I love that so much. And yes, this is one of my favorite pieces of yours, actually. It's so intriguing. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I was looking at that piece, and it is very curious, and you know, the figure is very centralized, and there are, as you mentioned, there's fish, there's an octopus, there's a stingray, there's sort of all this sea life all around her, butterflies as well as the hummingbirds and the bees, and it's just a really fascinating piece. She's got her hair has become a bird's nest. I love that piece a lot, actually, and I will mention, too, to our listeners who are interested, of course, at Kindler Studio, you do have prints for sale, and you've kind of operated your own business there as far as your artwork goes for people if they're interested in picking up these pieces. But, you know, I'm really interested to see some of these up close and in person. And I know that, you know, I mentioned at the top of the show that you have a studio over at Cedar House Gallery, and that's 122 East 36th Street here in Savannah. How did you first get hooked up with Cedar House Gallery, and what made you decide to kind of go over there and sort of invest your time and energy into that space?
Well, you know, after a few years of painting with the group down at the Jefferson and doing my work at home in my dining room and running out of wall space and having to, you know, negotiate for space in the house, I realized that two things. I needed to have a space where I could devote time, committed time to painting, and where I could just leave my stuff out and, you know, let things gel without interruption. So I had heard Sam on your show, and so that's how I became aware of Cedar House. And then when I was shopping around for space, I'm very analytical. I made a spreadsheet which had like 14 different possible places to paint and 24 different attributes, and I ranked them 1 through 5. And then I took the total and compared them. And Cedar House was the strongest of those, in part because it's only a 15-minute walk from where I live, which is really important to me.
Sure.
And one of the reasons we moved to Savannah was so we could cut down our carbon footprint. And, you know, we live on Henry Street, so we can walk most anywhere we need to go. And so we keep a budget of the carbon that we are putting in the atmosphere and the number of miles we drive, and so this fit right into that model. But Cedar House is a great community. There are, I don't know how many of us are in here now, but it's a big enough space that even during the pandemic we can be private enough not to worry about infecting each other. And Sam has been terrifically supportive of all of us, and that, one of the things I like best about it is the community.
Yeah, for sure. Sam Williams, who you're speaking of, is, I believe, one of those really great up-and-coming curators here in Savannah. She's got awesome energy, and I think it is infectious, and that space has taken on that personality. It's one of my favorite art spaces in all of Savannah. It's really beautifully done, and they've done a really great job. It's really cool to hear that you're over there, and actually, at the time of this airing, we're nearing the end of the fall art market that's happening at Cedar House that goes until October 29th, so this is airing live on October 28th. So you've really, if you're hearing this, you got to kind of head over there if you want to get involved in that. But why don't you talk a little bit about that fall art market? And then I want to get into your exhibition, and I want to talk a little bit about kind of your relationship with the viewers. But first and foremost, let's talk about the fall art market.
All right. Well, I know that there are over 20 artists who will be represented here. We're going to be very CDC compliant. Maybe is the way to put it. There will be a one-way flow through the building, and the floor will be marked to help you stay 6 feet apart from each other, if you like. Masks will be required, and windows, as many as possible, will be open, so we're going to have as much ventilation as we can as well. The nice thing about this big old house is, first of all, like you say, it's a very attractive place. It's real classy, but it has a main staircase, and it has a servant's stair in the back, so you come up through the house and the galleries in one direction, and you leave by going out and down and out into the courtyard. So it's very well organized and very conscious of safety.
That's cool. And what can people expect in your studio? If people come to the space, if they come to Cedar House Gallery, what can they expect to see?
Well, I'm very lucky right now in that I share a space, I share a studio space specifically with Kathy Varadi, who's not in town right now, unfortunately, but so she has some of her pieces in here, and I have the other half of the studio space with accumulation of my figure paintings. But the studio space immediately beside us is available, so Sam is allowing us to hang pieces in here. And I've got a very large triptych that I just finished, and the three parts are labeled Let's Reframe That, Narcissus, and Birth of Venus. And they are made in such a way that each of them matches the one beside it so that they can be moved. Any one of them can be the centerpiece, and it reads differently depending on which order you put them in.
Oh, wow. And I am so glad you brought up that piece, because I think out of all of your works, this is, to me, I mean, this is kind of your masterpiece thus far. I love this piece. And just to describe it to our listeners, you've got it set up as a triptych right now, with on the left side of the image is the self-portrait, and in the center is Birth of Venus, which, if those of you who are familiar with, is that Botticelli's Birth of Venus? Is that the influence there?
Yeah, there's a real clear reference to that.
Yeah, and but the female figure in the center, it's less about her hair and more about the octopus head that she has, which is amazing. But actually, probably my favorite of the three panels is the Narcissus piece, where you're making a reference to selfies, and there is actually a sort of note taped onto a cutout of a figure that says, "Stand here to take selfie." And I think this is a brilliant, brilliant piece of work. So talk a little bit about sort of how this all came together. What are the influences, and sort of what's going on conceptually with these, with this triptych?
Well, man, we don't have time for all of that. But, you know, again, this is one of those things that the paintings sort of erupt is maybe too strong a word, but seep out of the unconscious, and at some point they get snagged by the rational mind, and we try to put it into some kind of sensible order. But Narcissus has a little bit to do with, you know, attention culture and social media, and I thought it would be interesting if the figures in the painting are engaged with their phones and their tablets, and they're naked, and in a sort of a idyllic classical Greek environment. There are some temples in the back up on the hills. There are birds flying. There's a forest back there. There's masonry in the foreground or middle ground where they're sitting. But I just thought it'd be really interesting if the viewer then could have a spot in the painting, stand right there, take a selfie, and engage themselves in the figures in the painting. Now, whether that's a healthy thing to do or not, I can't say.
We
do.
Yeah, and I just want to kind of interject here for the listeners, is that this piece is pretty large, too. It's 48 by 36, so we're talking 3 by 4. Like, a viewer can literally stand in front of it, and it will work. You could actually take the selfie in front of the piece, and I just think that that's so fascinating. And like you're saying, that is the intention there, healthy or not.
Yeah, I hope a lot of people have fun with it. And, the thing about the pandemic is I've had so few conversations with anybody that this fall art market and the show in November are both ones I'm really looking forward to having conversations with people, because what has in dream work, I don't want to tell you what this painting means. You know, it means something to me that our collective unconscious art is having a dialogue. And so, what does it bring up for you? Also, it's mostly emotion. It's more emotion than reason, because we live in we're stuck in our brains in a soup of emotion, and all of this stuff is free verbal. Trying to get it from the inside to the outside, you know, words make a very poor vehicle for doing that. Paintings, I think, are better, and yet they're not, they're still one thing stuck in time. They're not, you don't get the flow.
Yeah, I love that you say that and bring that up, because that was actually the next point I wanted to bring up about your relationship with the viewer. And I'm going to read this little paragraph here from your statement, because I think it's something I want our listeners to hear, because it's really important in the way that people experience your works. And you say, Alan asked the viewer to slow down and pay attention, to react and to find the common ground of the collective unconscious. Each viewer of a piece of art is a unique experience between the painting and the viewer. So there is no right experience, just yours. In fact, please write your own title, or better yet, craft an emotional story from the images in a painting and share it with Alan. The practice of group dream work employs the phrase, "If this were my dream," when one listener reflects on the dream of another in the group. Try to approach the work as if this were my painting, and explore your own encyclopedia of symbols. See what's common and what's unique to your experience. On seeing, what do you feel? And I love that. I mean, it really ties into what you were talking about earlier in the interview about your experience doing the projective dream work, where people can say what they are feeling when hearing someone else's dream. So I love that you've kind of incorporated that into your paintings and the way that you are hoping that viewers will experience it.
Yeah, and I just recently heard someone attributing the quote to Duchamp, the viewer completes the work. And that's very much what I think happens. And in fact, it's never really complete, because it's viewed over and over again. So it's a living experience, because each viewer has their own unique experience with it.
I love that. I love that so much. And of course, you're going to be having a larger exhibition of your works at Cedar House. The install date is November 11th, which is a Wednesday, and it goes through the 14th. So people can probably, I would say, Thursday the 12th through maybe Saturday early in the day on the 14th, people will be able to see a larger exhibition of your show. Do you have anything extra planned for that that is a little bit different than the fall art market?
Well, I'm trying something a little different. I'm doing a series of 5 3-foot by 4-foot paintings that were inspired initially by a visit to the beach that my wife and I took a month or so ago when we were trying to get out of the house. And a thunderstorm was coming up over the dunes, and I got a couple of shots of that. But the feeling was something that I wanted to capture. And then I was reminded of the poem Second Coming by W.B. Yeats. And it's the one that starts with, "Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. Center cannot hold. Fear anarchy is loosed upon the world."
Mm.
And so it's long enough that I could break it down into 5 parts. This is the last part, is people are maybe more familiar with. "And what rough beast its hour come round at last slouches toward Bethlehem to be born." And he wrote that just after the First World War. So I've gone ahead and, first of all, I've written the poem in these 5 portions on the canvas. But, you know, all these other pieces are so tight and controlled that I really felt the need for some energy. And most of them are palette knife. The majority of the work on the canvases is sort of palette knife. There's some brush work, but I wanted to get the energy of this menacing thunderstorm coming over the sunny beach. And we'll see whether that worked or not. But I think I'll have them all done by the November show.
Wow. Well, I personally can't wait to see them. And I encourage people, if they're interested in learning more about the work of Alan Kindler, to head over to alankindler.com, that's alankindler.com, or head over to kindlerstudio.com, or even best yet, head on over to Cedar House Gallery at 122 East 36th Street, right here in Savannah. Alan, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air today and speaking to me about your work and your process.
Thank you so much.
That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Art on the Air with your host, Rob Hessler. Listen every Wednesday for our live show, broadcasting from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on 107.5 FM, Savannah Soundings, and worldwide at WRUU.org. And you can catch past episodes on the WRUU station archives on our website, as well as on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher. We'll talk to you next week, where we'll have another batch of art on the air.